CliffCentral.com. Anyway, we've got to talk about quite a few things this morning. It is time for the Burning Platform, which is brought to you by Nando's. Every week we get to check in on the most important stories of the day and of the week, and today is no exception. We mentioned earlier that Zweli Mkhize has decided to go and hide out in KZN. He's so embarrassed by what's happened. The ANC has said that embattled Health Minister Zweli Mkhize made the right decision by going on special leave. And the president announced that he was placing Mkhize on special leave. Pressure had been mounting for him to act, for the minister to step aside in the digital vibes matter. Mkhize himself apologized during a media briefing in Kimberley over multi-million rand communications tender awarded from his department to close associates. I think there is a feeling, and I don't want to be too optimistic about the ANC because it's always a dangerous thing to do. I think there's a feeling among the people of South Africa that this corruption stuff is just beyond the pale now, and we are not going to take it anymore. I certainly get the impression that they're taking it more seriously than ever because of the Zweli Mkhize case. And rather than us just go, oh, what a disaster, oh, it's such a mess, oh, I can't believe this, which is obviously our inclination, and you would be right to do that, considering how many times we've been lied to and had, you know, thieves with their hands in the till of South Africa. I understand there's huge suspicion around anyone in government, but maybe it's the first sign that there is a different approach being taken to these things. Before, this would have been brushed under the carpet, certainly in the Zuma era. He's not getting away with this. This is a very important minister. This is a guy who was heralded for taking us through Corona. This is the guy who was held aloft as a shining example of how important government can be and how effective they can be when battling things as threatening as an international pandemic. Remember, a year ago, Zweli Mkhize was probably one of the most important voices in South Africa. Now, embarrassingly, he is on special leave. He's gone back to hide out with his family in KZN. He says he's going to pay the money back. And the ANC is left with egg on their face. So let's take it for what it is and appreciate that it might be a move in the right direction. That's all I'm saying.
But don't you think it's a little too late for apologies or statements of this kind?
Of course it is.
Because for me as a citizen, I don't care about an apology like this. I don't care when it was heralded as a massive thing that our sitting president admitted to corruption and announced that corruption is a big issue.
Yeah.
I want to know how and why are we getting into these positions.
And we want to see
for you as leadership.
And we want to see people going to jail now, because the one thing that
how did it even happen in the first place, Gareth?
Yeah.
There are certain processes and procedures for people to be awarded tenders and for people to get certain deals in this country.
Yeah.
How is it that someone who's as powerful as Dr. Zweli Mkhize is allowed to have his son so closely linked to business?
Well,
how did we get to that?
Unfortunately, you see, government is made up of people who are career politicians, and they are party members first, and then they are citizens much, much later down the line. Most of them are only used to receiving money from the public purse, because they wouldn't earn money in the private sector. They are locusts. They basically swarm into a treasury, they deplete it of everything that they can, and then they fly out again. So this is how they operate. Therefore, if they can get money out for a member of their family, then they do that as well. It's not surprising. I know how it happens. You know how it happens. We mustn't be naive about this. The difference is that in South Africa, there seems to be very little cost for people to do that, even when they're caught red-handed. So in this case of Zweli Mkhize, because we're going to push this now to the nth degree, we're not just going to send him on special leave and then forget about it. Someone has to pay. And if it's paying back the money, that's all good and well, but this is a crime that's been committed. Someone needs to go to jail. Someone needs to be punished. It's not just a bad business deal where you can pay each other back. You know, if C and I have an arrangement where he says he'll loan me 10 grand and I go off and I buy the things I need for 10 grand and I say, I'll pay you back. I don't pay C back. I have a claim against, he has a claim against me for 10,000 rand. This is not like that. When you steal from the public purse, it's a criminal matter. It's not just a civil claim. Someone has to go to jail. And this is where the public prosecutor, the NPA, Shamila Batoy, who we've spoken about till we blew in the face, this woman has to pull her finger out of her ass and actually do something now. I don't know how it's possible for her to hold on to a job for as long as she has, where nothing seemingly is happening. It's just beyond a joke. Corona's Boring says, I live next to Dr. Zwelin Mkhize's nephew. He was one of the tenderpreneurs building RDP houses with one bag of cement per house. I'd like to know what kind of a house the nephew of Dr. Zwelin Mkhize lives in, if you would mind telling us. I'd like to know how that house looks. Bet you it's not an RDP house.
Pretty certain it's not even close to an RDP house.
Mm. So if you can tell us about that, that would be terrific. Anyway, so that's the big story of the day with respect to Zwelin Mkhize. There's also a story about the ANC, which we'll get to in a minute, about plans to push through legislation allowing for the expropriation without compensation, which we know has been on the table for a very long time. EFF have told Parliament that they will not vote for the legislation in its current form. So we'll get into that just now. But I don't want to waste a second without this guy, because he really is the man of the moment, and he's the perfect person to talk to this morning. He is Ted Blom. Ted is well known to our audience because he is a mining and energy advisor. He's also a problem solver and an advanced compliance analyst. He claims that Eskom has been lying to us. Ted, you don't look very impressed with things this morning, much like the rest of South Africa. How are you?
Hi, good morning. No, I'm actually very good. I've recovered from cancer, I believe. So I'm fighting fit and I'm ready for the game.
What I was referring to, of course, was Eskom, but congrats and we're pleased that you are healthy and fighting fit. I'm delighted to hear it. We need people like you in our lives. And when it comes to energy, you're the guy that we want to hear from. So, Ted, yesterday we had a sudden surprise announcement that stage four had kicked in at about 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon. This didn't surprise you, though. You've been watching what Eskom has been doing very carefully, and you have a way of telling whether they're telling the truth or not. They've been lying to us, haven't they?
Absolutely. I have evidence, which I'm prepared to show to a court of law, that Eskom has been underreporting. Last Wednesday, they were short of over 5,000 megawatts. In other words, level six type of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got it on record. Thank God I saved it. And they have acknowledged subsequently, if you go to the broadband interview that Sikonati did, they've acknowledged having, during the course of last Wednesday, being over 4,000 megawatts short. But there have been new revelations overnight, and you can now call me Ted Blom Unplugged, because now I can talk about what I know and that I've been carrying in my heart secretly for the last 3 years.
Go ahead.
And that is that there's been a deliberate effort and strategy and capture of Eskom to drive it into the ground. The Rater acknowledged last night on Judge Dennis Davis' show that he thinks that Eskom's coal plants are not fixable, and that Eskom must roll out renewables as soon as possible. Now, I was tipped off about this so-called secret strategy by some very senior ex-executives of Eskom. And I've been carrying this, and in fact, the unions are aware of this as well, because this was done in a union executive meeting where I was consulting.
Mm-hmm.
So this is now public knowledge, is that official strategy of the government is not to fix the coal power stations. In fact, the writer says he's not going to waste more millions on fixing the coal power stations, but that effort must be directed to the renewable and environmental friendly future of Eskom.
So, Ted, it sounds like a bit of a conspiracy theory, because the minute you start talking about this wanton destruction of the electricity supply, that becomes a very different conversation to just incompetence. And we've dealt with incompetence over the years. We've also dealt with a hollowing out of Eskom. There's very little in terms of actual engineering know-how there. Maintenance has gone for a ball of shit. But what you're saying is they're actually actively trying to destroy what we already have, which is, I mean, that's a very different kettle of fish, and forcing us into the renewable path. Will renewable energy be able to supply even close to what the coal-fired power stations used to at their prime?
Okay, so it's very simple. I don't know where you sit in this morning, but as far as I can see, the sun's not yet up.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's going to be strong today. Yesterday, it didn't come up to at all.
Yeah.
The fact of the matter is this economy needs at least 32,000 megawatts of power, and renewables are not dispatchable. What does that mean? They're not predictable. Mm-hmm. You can't switch order renewables and say, I want power at 8 o'clock because I'm going to bake bread, or I'm going to run my smelter, or I want a new shift to go underground. To do that, if you're going to go the renewable route, you need lots and lots and lots of storage, because the weather could be like this for 5 days.
And
you either choose to switch off your economy or you invest heavily in storage. Worldwide, there is no utility-scale storage available.
Right.
That's what Eskom is trying to do with their new battery strategy, is an experiment. We are the guinea pigs worldwide for this stuff. And anyway, Eskom doesn't have the know-how, the technical know-how to build batteries. I mean, I've never come across an Eskom battery anywhere in my 60-odd years of life. The bottom line is that it's a very irresponsible situation to abandon the coal assets, because it's either coal or nuclear. Those are the only two dispatchable. People say hydro, but we're a water scarce country, so you can't rely. Sweden and Finland and the Scandinavian countries can rely on hydro because they've got mountains and mountains of ice.
But Ted, even in the most advanced and developed economies, the idea that these sustainable resources will be able to power up the entire economy, it has not been true. It will not be true for some time. And as you rightly point out, the biggest problem there is storage. No one has developed batteries that can adequately store and release on demand the required amount of output of energy. So we, as you rightly say, are stuck with two options, either nuclear or coal. In this country, we have abundant coal. We used to have very good quality coal until the Guptas started getting shit quality coal into all of our power stations. But the other problem is that this is pie in the sky. Now, who would be behind such a stupid idea? Who would be the one who makes a decision? Okay, guys, let's do what you're saying is true here. I'm going to take your word for it, Ted. Let's actually sabotage our own system in order to experiment with renewables, or to force the South African public to be the guinea pigs in this experiment. Who would be behind that? And who would be financing that, or who would be promising some kind of deliverable at the end of the day? Because it seems to me that does sound a little bit like, you know, the Illuminati are coming out of the woodwork to try and force us into this situation. Who would be making these decisions?
Okay, so I may just correct you. Eskom has been, since 2001, been buying spot coal as part of their BE strategy.
Right.
And so the quality of coal, because Eskom wasn't geared to survey the coal that they're buying in by the truckload. And there's more than 1,500 trucks a day going to Majuba Power Station, as an example, and delivering. So these samples, loads are just dumped all over. They're not sampled.
Right.
Nobody does quality control, etc. That's been going on since 2001, and really got to speed in 2006 when I went back to Eskom and I saw what was going on. So it's not new. It's not just the Guptas. The Guptas maybe perfected it. And in fact, it was further perfected by the Rater last week when he signed the new Duva coal contract, and he doubled the price of the coal from 198 Rand to 550 Rand on what is a corrupt deal, because the investors in Soweto Mining is Bata Bata Trust and Tebe Investments, both investment arms of the ANC. So now you've got the ANC supplying expensive coal to Eskom. And lots of it, 8 million tons a year minimum. So that's been going on right under our noses, signed off by Zarate with a big smile. Now, you asked who's behind the other strategy. Well, I was told, and I believe it fully, that it's the cabal that's ruling the ANC, or one of the sectors of the ANC, or factors, or factions, or whatever, who are heavily invested in renewables as we speak, via their brothers-in-law and family. And they are totally geared up. And if you listen to some of the so-called analysts who are pro-renewable, they reckon that these guys are so geared up that they can salvage the loss of coal within 24 months.
Ted,
so this is a game plan that's been rolling out behind our backs.
Ted, many of us have been under the impression, I'm going to bring Pumi Mashiko into this as well. Pumi's with us on the Burning Platform this morning. I know we've only got you for about 20 more minutes, but Ted, It did feel like we were heading in the right direction when Andre de Ruyter was appointed, because it seemed like he was forcing municipalities who hadn't paid to pay. It seemed like he was starting to bring some smart people in there who could make sure that things were working again. He was taking a very hard look at maintenance of the power stations. Clearly, what you're telling me this morning is that this guy is part of the problem. He's got no solutions.
Well, that's why I call myself unplugged. I can now speak out because he's gone on record last night.
Okay.
So he's now admitted that he hasn't done the refurbishment and overall type of maintenance that they were boasting they were going to do 18 months ago. And in fact, he's just continued with the cut and paste type of maintenance. And that's why the same units, there's only 12 power stations in Mpumalanga. And despite his categorical assurances prior to last night that he's done overhauls. I mean, Gareth, just apply your mind. I don't know if you've ever been inside a power station. We're talking about hundreds of tons of machinery.
Sure.
And that takes a long time to build, 8 years or whatever. And if you're going to overhaul them, you need to take out all the wearing parts and get them remanufactured. If you do a car overhaul, you take out you only use the engine block. That's basically
Correct.
What stays behind. Okay, now if you're going to do the same thing for a power station, you're going to use the engine block and the rest you're going to refurbish or replace. If you do that at Eskom, they've got 80-odd generating units, 84, 83-odd generating units. For anybody to tell you that they're going to take 84 engines, even just car engines, apart in 18 months, reorder all the parts that need to be replaced, and put the thing together again in 100% working condition in 18 months, you've got to understand that that person must be smoking something, or hasn't got a clue of what he's talking about. On top of that, I did the calculation that it'll take at least 5 years and 600 billion rand, because these things have to be imported from overseas. If you want new turbines or blades or whatever it is, these things were manufactured. South Africa no longer has the capacity to do any of the manufacturing of these
right.
things. You have to order them from overseas. These are big units. You need to ship them here. You can't fly them here. You need to get into a queue, an engineering queue overseas with your order. You need to pay up front. And if you've just paid 80-odd billion, which I think it's another lie by Eskom that they've all paid off 80 billion rands with a debt. But if you have paid off 80 billion of your cash flow to debt, where are you going to get the money to pay for the refurbishment of the stuff? And then the rate that came clean last night is that he hasn't done the refurbishment that he promised us, and which we were holding our breath for and our hopes on that. He hasn't done that, and he's now abandoning the coal fleet. So this puts us between a rock and a hard place, because what they're saying now is get used to the load shedding or get off the grid. And Eskom's been telling you secretly to get off the grid every time they say use electricity with the screen messages the public pronouncements.
So, okay.
So we had a very strong turning point here now.
I want to give Pumi a turn here. We were talking earlier about how much power Eskom supplies to the rest of Africa and all that, and we're not sure what the details of that are. I know that you would be able to help us. But Pums, do you want to put your question to Ted before we get into that? We can't hear you, Pumi. You need to go off mute. There we go.
Oh, sorry, guys.
No problem.
Here we are. A year later, I'm still muting my mic. But Ted, you know, I think about a year and a half ago, Busi Mabuso from BLSA, when she was initially appointed as one of the was it at the board members at Eskom, when she came out and said, we have to be honest with the public. We have to tell the public that for the next 5 or 6 years, we're going to be under pressure because this is how long it's going to take to fix the problem. Everybody went up in arms. They vilified her. They hated her for making that statement.
Mm.
Is that what we need to be hearing from Eskom? The truth about how long it will take, how much, and what we need to do to deal with it. I mean, we can deal with it as long as we know. If we told
as long
the
as
truth,
we know,
is that
right.
the truth? And was Busi right or wrong to tell us that?
Okay, so having her vilified, I know the feeling. I've been vilified for 12 years for talking the facts as I understand them. And yes, I've just said so. To do a proper refurbishment job at Eskom and to pick up on the rear maintenance, or if you do the refurbishment, you don't have the maintenance load will decline. It's a 5-year job, minimum, 600 billion rand, minimum. Let's just get some facts on the table. The SIU and Bowman's both have indicated that the corruption at Eskom that they're aware of, and they haven't got to the Madupi and Kusili core supplier corruption, which started off on day one with 4 billion rand in the red. But they've picked up corruption of 178 plus billion rand. Mm. Eskom's debt is 400 billion rand. I've said for the last 5 years, sort out the corruption, get the money back, and you can at least halve the debt. And everybody says, well, 200 billion Eskom can more or less afford to service and pay down the debt. At 480 billion, it's nearly an impossible job. So I don't know what the problem is. If everybody understands that half of the debt has been funding corruption, and a lot of it is the big players. I'm talking about the Hitachis, the Alstoms, the guys who were given the core contracts to build Madupi and Kusili, and who were swapped around by Brian Dames as part of the corrupt dealings that he was part of, which also hasn't come out. Then if we can recover that, or either write it off, we say, listen here, guys, you stole, or you, the banks, you funded this corruption. Take the knock, take it on the chin. We're right. Not going to pay this corrupt money. We need some decisive action.
And if you're all in collusion and hiding and lying,
we're not going to go anywhere.
No one's gone to jail, hey? As far as I can tell.
You're right.
No one. If we put Brian Dames in jail, or if we put or any of the Eskom CEOs that have clearly got their hands in the till over the last couple of years, if we put any of them in jail, you better believe that would send a shockwave through the system. But, of course, they're not going to jail because the politicians are protecting them.
And the politicians are eating out of the trough.
Yeah.
So, I mean, one of the things that you raise, Ted, we never talk about this, is all this corruption and all this money, all this illicit money making the rounds, there are banks in the center of it. And even the banks are being held accountable. You know, nobody's saying, okay, but have you, Gareth, have you ever tried to withdraw 10,000 rand from your bank account? Do you know how many people you have to talk to?
Yeah.
And the queue you have to stand in? And then, like, people can transfer 256 million mm-hmm. from one account to another, and nobody can trace it back. Nobody can be like, hey, how does this happen? I think the collusion that happens is far bigger than just the government. It's not just the government. It's private sector. When you talk about Alstom, I mean, Alstom is a multinational company.
Yes.
It's, you know, the little South African we're fucked.
That's why I think, and I mean, I've heard noises from Zondo that they want me there, and then it seems to me they don't want me there. But the whole collusion started with the mandate and the date of commissioning of the Zondo Commission. You know, put yourself, just sit back and use some of the stuff that God gave you. If you're going to run a commission of inquiry, surely your starting point is, when last did this organization run well or properly? And it's got to be 2001, when Eskom won the Utility of the World Award or Global Award in New York City as the cheapest and most reliable and affordable energy in the world. They had a 95% energy availability. Last week it was below 50%. Surely that's where you start. And not to tell Judge Zondo how to run make tea and cake, but surely you start interviewing the CEOs from then on, the CFOs from then on, and you follow the trail and you try and see where did this thing fall off the rails.
Right.
You don't start in the middle because of the Guptas have been made a lot of noise of. Believe you me, the Guptas, as I said right up front, they maybe perfected some of the stealing, but they didn't originate the stealing. The stealing has been going on for far, far longer than that, and involves large companies. I've got evidence of BHP Billiton being involved in some of the fraud and corruption of this.
So, Ted, because we don't want this to just be a place where we spill the tea, as Gen X said just now, because that's certainly what you're doing this morning, but we also want to look for a way out of this and a solution. And what is your advice to people? I mean, you said earlier we've got to either get off the grid or we've got to, I don't know, move to a country that actually doesn't have as much corruption when it comes to power utilities than we do. What are the options for ordinary South Africans, or what can we look forward to, or what can we prepare ourselves for? As Pumi pointed out earlier, we'd prefer to know what we're in for here.
Okay, so I believe that the mechanical side of the coal business is fixable. I understand that the cost of coal generation goes up over time because the mining costs go up over time.
Yes.
But to do that, as I said, it's going to have to take a bit of time and a lot of money. In the immediate crisis situation that you're now facing, and it, I think is going to be exacerbated over the next 12 months until rational thinking comes back to the table, is people need to sit down with their families and categorize what their needs are and say, this is critical stuff. I'm going to have to make a plan because come hell or high water, I cannot afford to not have these functions running in my house. And one of them might be your alarm system. Another might be your fridge system. Another will be your lights, especially if you've got kids, you've got to study for school, et cetera, et cetera. And say, okay, these are the core issues.
The
internet. How do I solve this? How do I solve this? Do it in small bites so that you can afford to do it over a couple of months or get a loan or do something. But to just sit and roam me every day, it's not good for the national psyche.
Absolutely.
It's not going to be good for your household psyche either. So you need to say, well, come hell or high water, I don't care what they do to me. But at least I know that I've got a system. I mean, I've just bought myself a gas, a little stove, camping stove. Why? Mm. Because I get irritated. My wife gets very irritated if she comes home from work and she can't have a cup of tea.
Yeah.
That's her way of saying, well, I'm switching off from my office duties and I'm now going to be a mother and a wife. Then it comes to supper time. You know, you can't eat out every night. You can't go to the pizzeria every night and buy pizzas. You'll get sick. So you might need to buy yourself a primer stove or something like that, or a gas stove. But you start. You can't sit and wait for Eskom to do this for you. You need to take control of your own life and say, I'm going to be immune from Eskom.
And Ted, that doesn't mean you have to have an overall solution and get off the grid completely. That's very expensive, and for many of us, it's probably out of our reach to be able to spend that kind of money. Many people have done it, and I'm sure, are very grateful that they've done it. And also, they're paying less money over to corruption, because otherwise you're complicit. If you're giving these people money, you're actually complicit in the corruption.
You're funding the corruption, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think these are useful, practical solutions that each and every one of us can start taking up, buying a primer stove and a gas bottle and all that kind of thing. I mean, we've discussed gas as an option on this show many times, but there are also things that I don't know that we can totally make ourselves immune from this stuff. You know, there's always going to be.
Well, you can't, because your job probably requires. South Africa is the bastion of beneficiation of minerals.
Yeah.
So you can't mine without industrial grade power. You can't smelt with industrial grade power.
Mm.
So yes, you won't be immune, and you can't get to work without robots working. So you can't make yourself immune.
Mm.
But at least make yourself a safe haven where you say, well, come here, I work at the basic functions. I can look after my children. I can give them a hot plate of pop or soup or whatever it is at nighttime. And I don't have to go and shop every day like we used to do 50, 60 years ago because we didn't have fridges. At least I can keep my fridge of sorts going. In terms of the cost of getting off the grid, if you do it in a modular fashion and you don't
get ripped off,
most people can probably do a hell of a good job for under 100,000 rand. If you're getting quotes that are higher than that, come to me. I'll point you to people that I'm prepared to put my name on who will get you off the grid in a sensible fashion and an affordable fashion.
Okay. Thanks
for
that.
The modular approach really is something that you can do, right? Because you just do it every 2-3 months or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
And within a year.
And you'll be saving money. If you get off the grid, you'll be saving money. It's like when you say, you don't go and eat all the pills in the chemist. You take what you need, and you start off with that. And if that doesn't sort you out, you go and you take a little bit of antibiotics, or you incrementally increase. You don't go to the chemist and swallow every pill that's in the chemist.
So Cyril has a really interesting question, and I wonder if you have any information about this, Ted. Can we deduct these purchases from our taxes? You know, like, you know, when my kid goes to a remedial school, and you can deduct part of what this... the school fees is from our taxes. Can you do that with this?
Well, as things stand at the moment, unless if you're running a business from home, you won't be able to deduct it from taxes. I mean, in other countries like in America, you can deduct your mortgage payments from tax, which I think is the right thing, because then it encourages you to invest in bricks and mortar. Unfortunately, our tax system is a little bit archaic, so it's, unless you're running a business from home and you're then, of course, declaring your income from home, then you can, of course, deducted from tax. But in fact, if Mr.
Which Mundo, we Wendy, now are, we're working yeah. from home.
Exactly. So, yes, I mean, I haven't spoken to tax people, although I've got very close relationships with them, and I'll ask them and maybe come back to you and give you the feedback.
Yeah.
But I certainly think the problem is if you're a pay-as-you-go taxpayer, then it's very difficult to deduct the extra things from tax. But if you're an entrepreneur running your own business, of course you can deduct it. There's no doubt about it.
Ted, one last thing, because I know you got to go shortly. We were talking about how we supply, or we used to supply, certainly, electricity to the rest of Africa. Certainly countries like Zimbabwe have relied very heavily on us. Are we still doing that? And is Eskom still responsible for powering much of sub-Saharan Africa, even though we have consistent shortages?
Yes, we still supply Botswana. Okay. We still supply in Namibia. And certainly Zimbabwe and even Zambia. But all these countries are making urgent plans to get off the South African grid because they are also vulnerable to the irregular supply of power. And they get as short notice as you and I get that the load shedding is being implemented. You see, if you're running a potline, if you don't have power for more than an hour, and you're running a potline, let's say you're making ingots of aluminium or platinum or mm-hmm. metal or whatever you do. If that potline freezes, what does it mean? It means you switch off the cathode and the anode and it gets cold and it solidifies.
Yeah.
It takes you 6 months or longer to chip that stuff out of that potline. It's a disaster. So you're out of production for at least 6 months. And then the people that you're using to do the chipping, they're not technical experts. So they chip and they damage the insulation. And then you have to reline the potline. Ask the smelting people what havoc it causes when you lose power and you haven't drained those pots. So you need at least an hour or two to drain the pots so that they're empty when the power goes off. Jeez. Otherwise, they freeze, and then you've got a calamity. You'll be out of business. There's no doubt about it.
Wow. I mean, that's and we know that aluminium smelting, for example, is hugely energy intensive. I mean, if we switch off our aluminium smelters, suddenly there's a huge amount of electricity that's allowed back into the system. We have how many of those? We have one in Richards Bay, as far as I know.
And one at Mozal, even a bigger one.
Okay.
So there are two at Richards Bay, Hillside and Bayside. In fact, they were part of my portfolio when I was in the mining game at Genco.
Right.
And then after I left, they built Mozal because they thought it was such a good investment. And unfortunately, BHP, which still owns those, has realized that the power situation is not where it is. And they've actually cut back on some of those potlines. They're not running at full production as far as I know.
Ted, it's always good to talk to you. Thank you very much for being on the Burning Platform this morning. We hope to see you again soon. And once more, congratulations on beating cancer. If you could do that, you might even be able to beat Eskom. We're on your side.
Thank you very much. I've been very blessed. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ted. Thank you. What a terrific guy. And the work he's doing is really just unbelievably. That talk about citizen activism. And remember, the part that Ted doesn't talk about is how much nonsense he has to put up with to bring this information to us, of course. And, you know, how many people don't want him to speak openly like he is. And I think that it's extremely praiseworthy that there are good people in society who are fighting the good fight for us. So, again, Ted Blom, always good to hear from you. So, Pumi, there are other things we need to talk about besides power. Are you ready to get into those?
Absolutely.
So apparently,
besides power.
Yeah. Well,
you know,
I mean,
the power situation. You need power to do anything.
It's all or nothing, right? so apparently, plans to push through expropriation without compensation have suffered a bit of a setback this week. Not surprisingly, the EFF have said they will not vote for the legislation in its current form. They support expropriation without compensation, but they believe the proposed laws don't go far enough. And this is where coalitions break down. Some people will say, actually you shouldn't have expropriation without compensation. That is the biggest problem in trying to make sure property rights are protected, which is the basis of the economy. And then there are other people who say, no, no, this doesn't go far enough. In this case, the EFF, who want more than just expropriation with compensation. I don't know what they want. Do they want it with violence? I mean, what are we asking for here?
You know, Gareth, the EFF, if we understand that the EFF's really only reason for being alive is the fact that they are there to pull the ANC further to the left.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they're there for. So everything that they ever push for, everything they ever push for is stuff that is taking the ANC further and further to the left. And when you think about the kind of noise that they make, that's what the noise is meant to do.
Mm-hmm.
So the derailment now of the, it's not going far enough. God, I think I've like lost you.
No, you're still there. We can still hear you.
Cool. It is driving me berserk. I've been on the phone 20 minutes with Salsi and it's such driving me crazy. But that's what it is, you know. So they push and push and push, and now it's on the agenda. Expropriation is on the agenda. Mm-hmm. You know, we've got to look at Section 25. They pushed and pushed and pushed.
All right, but
and now here we are. Now that it's on the agenda, now that it's being debated in Parliament. Actually, no, it doesn't go far enough.
Yeah. So we have to push further. But of course, all that will do is that will just kick the can down the road. So in some ways, we should be grateful that the EFF are so stupid that they don't see that this is going to hamstring the process, because that's exactly what it's going to do.
Well, and I think more and more, this is my favorite drum to beat, more and more, all the people of South Africa should participate more. You know, when they are public participations, mm-hmm. when there are hearings, when you have to make submissions, we should be there. We should not be allowing ourselves for the 44 people that are the EFF representatives in Parliament
yes.
to be the ones that can stall or move forward. 44 people, guys, that is who is holding all of us ransom. You know, the ANC and they are 300 odd people. But this is where it is. 44 people in Parliament can stall a legislation in this manner. You know, and this is why we all have to participate. We have to be there.
I wanted your opinion before we wrap up the Burning Platform this morning on Twitter being banned from Nigeria by Muhammadu Buhari, the president of Nigeria, because of a tweet that he put out, which, again, is against these very arbitrary and capricious community guidelines and rules that Twitter say that they have. According to Donald Trump, not surprisingly, he says, well done to the country of Nigeria, who just banned Twitter because they banned their president. He said he should have banned Facebook while he was still in office, but the company's boss kept calling me and coming to the White House for dinner, telling me how great I was. Mr. Trump, well, then you're an idiot, Donald. If it took that little to convince you not to go after bad people, then, you know, he saw his customer. Maybe Mark Zuckerberg is cleverer than I've given him credit for. He can spot an idiot. This is a bad thing for Donald, not necessarily bad for Mark, if Mark could convince him that easily. Just go for dinner and say how great I am. But I do think it's interesting. Like, do you think South Africa, this is a conversation that I had with Sia on Monday, I think it was, think South Africa would be better off or worse off if we banned Twitter?
The problem with bannings, is it's a slippery road. It's very slippery. So you ban Twitter and people can't use that platform. Why don't we ban IOL? We don't like what they're mm-hmm. saying in Iqbal Sube. Mm-hmm. You know, when you start, it's a slippery road.
And do we want to give government that kind of control, right?
We definitely don't want to give government that kind of control. They've already cocked up everything else they have on their plate, mm-hmm. you know. The thing about what's happening in Nigeria is Nigeria is also a series of dictators, you know, coming on board. And the whole of Africa is regressing, actually, when you think about it. You know, we're all just going backwards, not just South Africa, but the whole of Africa, where more and more power is going to the governments and more, like,
sad and depressing reality, but I think if we don't acknowledge it, then we're only fooling ourselves. And, you know, the idea that we might have reached our peak when Thabo Mbeki and Olusegun Obasanjo were trying to build up some kind of credibility in an African renaissance, and if that was the zenith of what we can achieve as a continent, I'm very concerned. Because as you rightly say, we have been slipping backwards. And I mentioned this morning, there will be stories about, you know, children being kidnapped and villages being torched and 7,000 people in Burkina Faso yesterday who had to go and seek refuge in another part of the country because they were just essentially at the tip of a sword or at the barrel of a gun forced out of their village. 7,000 people, to move 7,000 people, that's no messing around. These Islamist militant groups are doing their best to hold us all at ransom. And I just want to refer to one other story before we go, because I know that the Burning Platform is something you come to for, you know, all the current affairs. What do you think of the proposed firearms legislation? Now, I don't know whether you're a gun owner or not. I don't know whether you care about this particularly. But we have Bheki Cele, who, again, is not a credible human being. He's a joke. He makes himself, with every occasion he's ever given to open his mouth, he makes himself more of a mockery of a sensible, serious person. He wants to remove the right of South Africans to defend themselves with a weapon because he says that's the police's job. But we know already in a country like this, the police can't do that job. Furthermore, we know that women in this country are the victims of all kinds of violence and crime, and perhaps the only solution I've seen that's practical and sensible is the one that women might be able to arm themselves so at least the attacker wouldn't know and he'd be less likely to strike. What do you feel about this? I mean, is it likely that this legislation will even be passed, or is it just pie in the sky? And does it show us again how government is trying to shut down all the avenues of escape and essentially make us hostages?
So the good news is that the ineptitude of the government means it will take a long time before they can get to the stage of even talking to everybody, consulting, getting, it'll take a long time before we get there. But I think what we are seeing is we're seeing a center not holding at the ANC. Like they're ricocheting from issue to issue and everybody's doing it their own thing. And this is, you know, I wanted to say, there was a center thing saying participating in politics, but we're busy doing other things. It's just not realistic. But this is the problem with us not participating, even if it is for 10 minutes a day, looking at what's on the parliamentary website to see what bills are sitting in front of parliament, to show up because that's what they do. The consultations happen all over the country when there are consultations. They're well publicized where they are, where you go, you know, your civic center. Because if we don't take an interest in politics, who was it that said it? I mean, this is not news, right? Politics will always take an interest in you. Yeah. Here we are today with the Eskom issue because it was a political issue. It was a political issue and we didn't pay attention to it. Now we're stuck with having every 2 hours rolling blackouts throughout the country and our entire economy coming to a grinding halt. So it's not enough to just say, oh, well, I'm busy doing other things. You're not going to have those other things to be busy with if we don't take care of that stuff too.
Well, here's Rob Hutchinson, who we've had on the Burning Platform before. And I've actually been on his site to sign this petition. But with regards to the Firearms Control Act, people must sign the petitions. Make sure to also submit an official comment as Parliament discards signatures on a petition. We have an official participation platform on DRSA. So go along there. In fact, Rob, thank you for that. I'm glad you're listening to the show this morning because I was going to mention that I went on your site the other day and I signed and I left a comment. And I hope that all of these comments will go to Parliament, and we do have to. Rob Hutchinson is an example of the kind of citizen action that you're talking about, Pumi. Ndogozo says,
they're nonprofits. They're lobbyists. They're lobby groups. You can volunteer your time if you want to volunteer your time. Sure, you know, there are many, many things. Just find the things that resonate with you and resonate with what you believe in, and find those groups. There are lobby groups for everything.
Ted used the word modular this morning, so be modular about your political influence. Okay, that's also a good point. I just want to go back to Ndogozo because he said something interesting about Twitter. He says there's no need to ban Twitter. You could just ban yourself from Twitter and live a happier life. Precisely. You don't have to pay attention to that stuff. You really don't. So, all right, on that note,
who still buys the stock?
No, exactly. Come on. I don't take anything that goes on Twitter seriously anymore. So, guys, thanks very much for this morning. Pumi, we're going to wrap it up on this note, and we will get going tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. bright and early. If you've got any suggestions of people that you'd like to have on the show, anything that you'd like us to discuss on the Burning Platform, please let us know by email, gareth@cliffcentral.com. It comes straight to me, and I always reply, so I'd love to hear from you. And, Pums, we will see you next Thursday.
Next Thursday.
See you next Thursday. Oi, that's if you take that as an alliterative, what do they call it? An acronym. We're in big trouble. See you next Thursday. All right. That is it for the Burning Platform. All right. The Burning Platform is brought to you by Nando's. And we're always very, very excited when Nando's is part of anything because we know it's cutting edge. It's the best. It's uncomplicated. It's fearless. It's unapologetic. And that's precisely what we try to do here every week. This is no exception. CliffCentral.com.